This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
G'day, mate. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. That was horrible. Hello. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Are you having a little bit of fun? We are going south of the border, and I mean south of the equator, actually. We're going to go into the southern hemisphere this week to visit with Tim Ellis down in Melbourne, Australia, who is the proprietor, owner, and the resident of the Laneway Theatre, which is a magic theatre there in Melbourne, and he is also the creator of the Melbourne Magic Festival and a full-time performer on cruise ships and corporate things, and just as he, you know, Australia is often referred to as Oz, so he is a real wizard there in Oz, but he is the guy that I always like to say brings the thunder from down under. So he's the guy who really does make things happen in Australia. He's a mover and shaker among the magic world in that community, certainly, and is worldwide, and I should say known internationally because of his FISM award-winning acts and his participation in our community, and gets around quite a bit. And you may have seen him perform, you have seen him lecture. If not, you can take a look over on the website, the Magic Word Podcast, and see some videos there as well as some photos and everything of this gentleman. And speaking of that, of course, we do supplement the audio portion of this with a video portion. And this week, as we talked, we were doing a Zoom call, so I recorded that, and you could watch the two of us talk with each other. He was recording that there from his home, which is the Laneway Theatre in Melbourne, although we didn't really take a tour of that, so you just get to see our two talking heads there. But if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com there, you can click on a video, and you can watch our YouTube video, and I suggest if you haven't yet subscribed, please do. Go to youtube.com/TexasMagician and subscribe. And while you're doing that, you might think about also giving us a 5-star rating in the iTunes store or whatever platform you use to listen to your podcast, in particular, the podcast you're listening to right now. And just give us a nice comment as well as that 5-star rating that helps us immeasurably, more than you can possibly imagine. So please help us out with that. We would appreciate it. But when we recorded this conversation, it was prior to Christmas. So we were talking a lot about what was happening on or around Christmas. So we were talking about Santa and also some of the traditions we celebrate in the Northern Hemisphere versus the Southern Hemisphere, because the seasons are completely different. We are experiencing winter. Well, I guess theirs is called summer. I guess it's our winter, but they're in the middle of summer, basically. So we talk a little bit about that at the beginning of this conversation. But this is just another delightful romp. And this time we're going south of the equator. So please enjoy and welcome our guest this week, Mr. Tim Ellis, here on The Magic Word. For this week's episode, we're going to be going down under, as they say, to see a man of thunder. Someone who does a lot of magic, someone who is well-known not only in Australia, but worldwide. If you have attended FISM conventions, you have seen him around. He not only attends, but competes and has won one of the competitions and has got his own theater, Laneway Theater, there in Melbourne, Australia. And someone I normally get to see, hopefully from year to year, at the 4F convention. It's, I say not every year, because it is quite a jaunt to get over to the States all the way from Australia, certainly going across to the East Coast over there. So please welcome my friend all the way from Melbourne, Australia, Mr. Tim Ellis. Hey there, Tim.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm just waiting for the applause to die down. That's fantastic.
When you do fly, by the way, do you go west to east, or do you kind of go the other direction? I mean, like when you're going to New York, do you then have to go like to Hawaii and LA and then over that way when you're traveling over?
Usually it's Melbourne direct to LA and then wherever.
Okay. So I didn't know whether you actually go west and go then towards Perth and on out that way. If it's closer that way. No,
that's longer. Very expensive.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, as we're talking right now, we're talking here just before Christmas time. And so it is December. By the time this comes out, it'll be a little bit later. But you'll notice how, for those of you who are watching this on video on YouTube, we are both dressed differently because there in the Southern Hemisphere, you're wearing short sleeve T-shirt.
Yes, and shorts. I'm not going to stand up to show you, but I am. And I've had to black out the room to make it look nice. Otherwise, it's going to be too sunny and too bright. I'm sorry to spoil it for everyone else. It's just very hot and beautiful here in Melbourne at the moment during summer.
And me, on the other hand, for those I'll show you, you might appreciate this. How do you like my Australia shirt, sweatshirt?
I'm very impressed. I'm glad you had one that keeps you warm.
Oh, yes, I do. Nice sweatshirt. We got this when we went to Australia so many years ago. We went to Auckland, then on over to Sydney and learned how to pronounce Melbourne properly as Melbourne, right?
Yes. Oh, good, good. Yeah. When you said I learned how to pronounce Melbourne properly, I thought, that's not it. Melbourne. Very classy. We're a classy bunch up here.
That's right. That's right. It's a wonderful country. Really enjoy that. One of the things, speaking of Christmas and everything, since obviously within the Northern Hemisphere, we celebrate and have snow and everything, and all of our holidays are based around snow and all the songs, let it snow and everything. Do you have any Australian songs that are similar, let the sun shine or something instead of letting it snow?
Yes, there are some songs. I don't sing them myself, but
Thanks for sparing us on that.
Yeah, there's one about boomers, something about boomers. I can't remember what it is, but it's like an Australian Christmas carol about kangaroos. They're called boomers. There's a few other Australian Christmas carols, but we tend to go the traditional, more the English sort of style as far as our singing and carol events go. We always have big Christmas carol events in Melbourne. We have a place called the Sydney Meyer Music Bowl, which is a big open air auditorium, and they always have a big event there on Christmas Eve. And they also have one in Sydney in the Domain, which is a big park, up in Sydney, the center of Sydney, called the Domain. And they have a huge one there, usually a week or so before Christmas. Everyone gets together, they all sing the carols, they all celebrate. But then when it comes to the actual day itself, we're usually out at the barbie.
Okay.
In the backyard. Or at the beach, yeah.
it just seems so different. And I'm wanting to bring this up because although we have a lot of listeners in Australia and in the Southern Hemisphere for that matter, and so when we're talking about this, I mean, like, I'm sure they're thinking, well, of course, this is natural. We don't, you know, we know this. But for those in the Northern Hemisphere, like myself, I'm not as familiar with what the traditions are. That's what I was wondering. Like, whenever you do go with the Christmas, sorry to dwell on this, but I find it fascinating. When you do sing Christmas carols, are you wearing like what you wear now, like shorts and T-shirts, or wearing bathing trunks or something? Or are you dressed traditionally like in a sweatshirt or sweaters and long pants or what?
Well, I'm not sure where you get the traditional sweatshirt for Christmas, but no. I mean, are you thinking like the ugly Christmas
ugly sweaters? Ugly Christmas sweater. No, yes, no, exactly. No.
We don't go there. If you do, it's a T-shirt version of the ugly sweater.
Okay, that's funny.
But yeah, I've done a lot of Christmas functions over the last week or so, and everyone is very, very casual in short sleeve shirts, walking around, sweating like you wouldn't believe, because even with the air conditioning, it can get quite hot. Everyone's just, you know, seafood platters, that sort of stuff. Right. They've got a little bit of a feasting table that they usually have out there, and they sort of just walk around very casual, almost like cocktail hour. So that's sort of the corporate Christmas parties that we have. There's no sitting down and, you know, around the big like Tiny Tim with the beast and stabbing
board and everything. Right.
Nothing like that. No.
Around the holidays for us in the Northern Hemisphere, when we're doing, as you say, corporate parties and all that, typically they were the busiest during December. And is it the same way there? Is it one of the busiest times of the year, or do you find it's busier other times of the year, or is this just another time of year?
Over the last few years, everything's gone completely crazy. But before that, December was known as the busiest time for certain performers in certain environments.
Right.
The whole corporate end of year function has sort of faded away to an extent for many different reasons. And a lot of the busier times around June or July, the end of the financial year, they tend to have more corporate events. But family celebrations, definitely at the end of the year. But a lot of them can't afford entertainment, or maybe they're having an outdoor event where, you know, having a magician's not the right, you know, the right call. Sometimes you have, I did one the other day, which was
in a park on a beach.
Yes.
And I was playing my Mad Hatter character. And so there's like the big hat and the big coat and big outfit and stuff. And everyone's having a lovely time. And I sort of getting them all together under a little marquee so they had some shade. Somehow managed to keep all their attention for 45 minutes before my time was up, and I was able to go back to the car and just collapse in a heap after this. But I was sort of, I was telling my friends, I was saying, yeah, I'm doing a show tomorrow on a beach. And they're like, it's really hot tomorrow. Why are you doing, why have they booked a magician? It's like, yeah. This is not, a, you know, it, they just wanted to keep the kids amused for a short time and keep them all happy. And that's sort of more, that's pretty much more what you'll get at this time of year, more sort of family events rather than corporate events.
Hmm.
I did do one at Crown Casino last week. And, you know, you hear all about the supply chain shortage and everything like that. Apparently there is quite a staff shortage. So
okay.
When I went to the event, I followed the map to the room that this big dinner was being held in. And it was all locked. This is a massive casino. But this section of the casino is locked, and we had to find staff members. There's some other attendees who were running late with me, and we had to find staff members to come and unlock and let us in. And they're like, oh, that shouldn't be locked. And we're like, yeah, it shouldn't be locked. We got up there, I found the organizer. They said, yeah, yeah, I went out to my car and came back. I was locked out again. So essentially what had happened is they don't have enough staff to man the doors.
Oh.
They didn't even have enough staff to serve the meals and everything like that because people are off sick.
Right.
And so that's really affecting a lot of the hospitality industry at the moment. And it was funny because even when I got in there, everyone's just sitting at their tables having their meal, and like there's a DJ sitting on the stage. That was it. It was just the DJ and me. And the guy said, could you maybe just do a little show on stage to kick the night off? I'm like, well, you didn't book a show on stage. So.
We get that agent. A lot.
Yeah, the agent was like, how much extra are they prepared to pay? I said, probably nothing. I'll just do what I'm supposed to do. But it was sort of, it was more indicative of what the scene is like in the corporate world at the moment. It's all very, very quiet. People are just trying to run their businesses and keep their businesses surviving rather than having celebrations at this point. But I think as we progress, you know, it will change. I'm very lucky because I'm doing everything. I love to change. I love to, you know what I've done with the Zoom shows and everything like that. I love to adapt and create new things for new environments. And so I'm always excited to find out what the next challenge is that we're going to be hit with.
Well, before I get into that, one last thing I want to kind of finish up. I started to ask, you were mentioning about kind of English style Christmas. Do you guys actually use crackers also? I mean, you pull the things apart like Christmas?
Yes, it has been a tradition at my family gathering that I would make the Christmas crackers.
Oh, okay.
I've been away for the last 2 years with cruise ships, but ones previous to that with cruise ships. So I've missed Christmas, but generally I will actually make crackers. So I'll make them from the ground up, put all sorts of different little prizes in them, write the jokes myself, put all the exploding parts in. And sometimes I'll modify the exploding parts and make them slightly more explosive than they probably should be.
Very surprising.
Yes, it's quite a lot of fun. Sometimes that dish can go back. That's the rule. But it's been a lot of fun doing that. So yeah, the cracker tradition is a big thing in Australia. But we do have different crackers, I think, than the traditional English ones.
Okay, sorry. No, I don't want to continue to dwell on that, but I still find it pretty fascinating about some of the traditions.
You're so busy out there being Santa. You're just obsessed with Christmas at the
moment.
Well,
I have been a little bit busy, which is why my beard's longer than normal. I start letting this grow about in October and just kind of let it go. So I can do some Santa shows and appearances, certainly. But you do obviously have Christmas trees and things like that. I mean, that you have like a traditional tree and everything. So
yes, I think basically, Scott, what you're saying is you want to come to Melbourne for Christmas. That's
I
what
would like
wrong.
To do that sometime. You know, that'd be
different.
I would like to do that. Now, as far as like working cruise ships and that kind of a thing, do you typically work ships just in and around Australia, or are you working worldwide whenever you do a show from time to time on a cruise?
Well, I just actually got off the phone to my agent about half an hour ago because they've just made a new announcement that said the government said they're going to ban cruise ships till February or April or something like that in Australia. Mm-hmm. And I had several booked in January and February, which were booked from last year when they were optimistic. And I think that he's getting back to me. He's pretty sure they're cancelled. And his attitude is he thinks that the whole cruise season in Australia is not going to come back till next year now, not
in 2023.
Which, you know, it's not great because I do enjoy doing the cruise ships. I usually do Regency and Silver Seas and, you know, the Six Star lines, which are quite nice. You know, you get your own butler and minibar and balcony.
I work Silver Seas. It's awesome.
I love those ships.
They know your drinks.
And I have to sit there. Like, I've been working for the last 6 months preparing a non-contact show because they're very strict at the moment. You're not allowed to have anyone come up onto the stage. Right. You're not allowed to get off the stage into the audience. Despite the fact that you probably have just sat and had dinner with them half an hour ago.
Shoulder to shoulder with people. Right, exactly.
Exactly. But anyway, so when I do the crew, to answer your question, when I do the cruise ships, it's usually, there's usually one element of Australia in it. So it's Australia to New Zealand, Australia to South Pacific, Australia to Singapore, Australia to Bali, or vice versa. I think the longest one I did was actually from New Zealand to Hawaii. So that, I mean, we always count Australia. New Zealand as part of Australia anyway.
Well, yeah. It's not that far.
But that was really long because it was almost entirely sea days. There were no ports. Like, I got on and then we were there for about 8 or 10 days and then I got off.
And how many shows did you do? Did you do like 3 shows?
No, I just did 2. I was ready to do an extra one if need be, or do a split show with some of the other entertainers. We were all going a bit mad. We're all going like, you know, come on, we've got to do something. You know what it's like when you're on a ship.
Sure.
You've got all the other activities you can do, but after 8 sea days, you're just going, I've got to do something.
Well, I just performed recently on a river cruise. Having never done that, I found that very delightful because you have different things you can get off during the daytime. I mean, they're docked, you know, at a certain times of the day or night, and they have people come on and off. So they have local talent that's going to be going onto the ship and then back off or whatever. And also during the day, you have excursions of bike trips and trips to cathedrals and castles and all kinds of stuff, you know, that you're doing. But then in the evening, you know, they want some entertainment after happy hour and after dinner or something. So it was just in France. I was in France. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My parents used to go on those and they loved them.
Yeah, completely different. I like that vibe almost better than a cruise ship because you have a smaller, about 133 people or so. It's like doing just a regular show as opposed to doing a theater show. I mean, the theater shows are okay, but I feel like that I can really interact with people when they're closer right up front. You know what I mean?
I know. I love about the big cruise ships, like Celebrity and some of the bigger ships, mm-hmm. is you're on a stage for 3,000 people, 2 times in one night. You know, it's amazing. Yeah. You're just on this massive stage. Everything's there. People packed in there, and you finish the show, and then you reset and you do another one.
Right.
And there's nothing like that. But on the smaller ships, even though you often end up doing more like a lounge show for maybe 100 people, mm-hmm. and the guy who's operating your sound system's like, you know, they're just sitting there, yeah, you can do your own sound. That's okay. Don't worry. You know, no, you're paid to do it. No, that's okay.
You do it.
Yeah, they're really casual. It's a completely different vibe. But the cruise experience is completely different, you know. Mm-hmm. And you do have that more intimate sort of thing where you do meet passengers throughout the whole cruise, and so you know you watch the cruise director up introducing you, and they're making jokes at specific passengers, and everyone's laughing because they know all. You know, often these people are on there for 6 months on these world cruises, and they're so expensive. I don't know how they can afford it.
Well, I mean, like on Silver Seas, I know they have some ships that actually you buy like a timeshare and you own basically. People come and stay on them for weeks or months at a time.
Yeah, yeah. And those are the people who are very, very, they want quality entertainment.
Sure,
if you're not engaging them, you'll see them stand up and leave, you know, after 5 minutes of your show. Thankfully, I haven't had that. Thankfully, but I've heard.
I was going to say, have you? I don't.
I've heard.
Okay.
I won't name names, but I've heard.
Now, around Australia, do you have any kind of a venue that's anywhere close to like the Magic Castle, or is that like one of the only places in the world? Of course.
You mean the Laneway Theatre?
Yeah, the Laneway Theatre. So tell me about that, because the Laneway Theatre is actually, you live in it. That's your house. Is that right, basically? I mean,
you
built this thing.
I'm not sure if I live in the Laneway Theatre or the Laneway Theatre is in my house. Either way, it works. It used to be the Australian Broom Company, which is where I live. It's a big factory. It's a 40-square factory upstairs and downstairs. And when I bought it, it was completely gutted and empty. And I built it all from scratch. Not personally, I just paid people money. I have no technical skills whatsoever. Okay. And so they built it the way I wanted it. And downstairs was my big rehearsal studio. And I've been living here for, I think, 20, 22, 23 years. And so about 3 or 4 years ago, I thought, you know, I really want to have a retirement plan. I want to have something where I can do shows whenever I want to do shows. People can come in and watch the shows.
They'll come to see you rather than you go to see them. Yeah,
exactly. And so I found a guy was selling cinema seats from one of our cinemas here in Melbourne. Very comfortable, plush with cup holders and everything like that. And so I bought a whole batch of them and they filled up my garage. And then I was like, ah, okay, I really have to do this now because if I want to park my car ever again, I'm going to have to build this. So we got a crew in, we built the theatre. There's like tiered seating and everything like that, had everything installed. And it's been a great success. And so it's still not quite the way I want it to be in the sense that I can just call a show any day, you know, and announce, I'm doing a show next Wednesday and boom, it sells out. It doesn't quite work as well as that. But then again, I don't have any overhead expenses. You know, I can literally cancel a show if I don't want to do one or if there's not enough bookings and it doesn't affect my bottom line at all, which is amazing. But the main thing is it motivates me tremendously. Now, I started the Melbourne Magic Festival, as you know, about 15 years ago. And part of the motivation to start that was so that I could create new shows every year. And so every year I'd create one, two or three full 1 hour shows every year to do at the Melbourne Magic Festival. But now I'm doing that in the Laneway Theatre. So I'm creating 2 hour evening shows. And I've just finished like 2 nights ago, I just did the last performance of the Laneway Theatre Experience, which was my most recent show. Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating because it was actually getting really, really good.
And that was people, live or Zoom?
Live. And people who've seen it before were coming back again and going, wow, that's even better. And I'm like, oh, now it's cooking. Yeah. But yeah. I've promised I'm going to do a new show next year. So that's the end of that show.
Well, do you have other people, guest artists coming in, or is it always just featuring Tim Ellis?
No. We also have a show called Slight Night that Nicholas J. Johnson runs. And so that Slight Night came from a show that evolved in the Magic Festival. So that was called The Best of the Magic Fest, where Nicholas would introduce three different magicians and they would come and perform in the late night show at The Best of the Magic Fest. And then he wanted to continue this because it was very popular. And so every month, and this will start back again next year, or he hasn't done it this year, but it'll start next year. Every month he would introduce three different magic acts and they would perform. And so that happens here in the Laneway Theatre and that always sells out. We also have occasional other magicians will book it out to do a show. Sometimes I'll get clients who just book the whole theatre and just want to have, you know, that they'll decide what show they want.
Right.
And sometimes we also do burlesque shows with some of our friends. They come and do a mixture of magic and burlesque. And we've had other people interested in jazz shows and comedy shows. And we've had a few people rented out to rehearse their shows in. So they find it a really comfortable space to develop a show that they're working on. So it's a pretty little busy sort of thing. But it's been hard when I started it because I was doing a lot of cruise ships. And so we do virtually no Laneway Theatre shows in the first half of the year because I'd be away doing cruise ships all the time. But now, you know, I've got the opportunity to do over the last 6 months every Saturday night. And it's been wonderful just, you know, sitting back going, okay, Saturday night's coming up. Just get the show ready.
Right.
Focus on making the tricks better. And it's really evolved very well. So my new show I'm working on is called The Magic Menu Live. So that was a show we did on Zoom called The Magic Menu, where the audience could actually choose at various points from a menu of tricks as to what they would like me to perform. So we're taking that live and making it a much more complex and more interesting show where the audience actually gets to choose an appetizer.
The direction of the show.
Yeah, they choose an appetizer, an entree, a main course, and a dessert from a printed menu that they get to keep. And I've just added another thing in to the show because I'm still writing it at the moment. I've still got a month or so before it goes live. But in the theatre, there's a piano. And I've always had I've got a massive collection of cards, as every magician has, all these really strange, obscure decks. And so I'd always lie a selection of cards on the keyboard of the piano. And people would look at it and go, oh, they're interesting. So I just realised if I replace all those cards with different gaffed decks. So during the show, I'll say, just grab any deck from the piano and let's do a trick with it. Whatever they bring me, I do that trick that the deck does. And so I've taken a lot of decks and put them into different boxes, so they just look more interesting and they're relevant to what the trick does. So there's even more variety. So there's 20 tricks in the show at the moment, 20 routines in the two-hour show, and five of them are multiple choice.
Okay. So when the audience is selecting that, is it obviously a democratic choice? I mean, the majority wins for whatever it's going to be, or how does that, how's it selected?
It may be that way. At the moment, usually what I do is I usually sort of ask, in the old version, I'll ask someone, what would you like to see? And they'll choose it. If I've got someone at the table, they choose what they'd like to see. But yeah, it could be done that way. I've got five different options, so we could at least do one of them as a democratic choice.
Right. Right. Or so that it would seem. Depends. You could use a switch box or something, you know.
that spoils it for me. The problem I've had is during Zoom, I actually had too much time on my hands, as most of us did. And I used to sit down and go, oh, what tricks will I do now? And I'll look around and I'm like, oh, I haven't done this trick for ages. And I'll put it together and go, oh, and I'll try it on Zoom and go, oh, that worked. And so what I was doing is I was categorizing all of my tricks and cataloging that I haven't done for years. And I put each trick into a little plastic takeaway food container box. Mm-hmm. So then I labeled them and stacked them all up. And so what would happen is when I was doing a trick in a show, I'd take it out of the box, put the box in a different place, so all the empty boxes are stored, and I'd use it. And that way then I'd remember where my tricks are. I'm like, oh, that's empty. That means, oh, hang on, that's in this bag, that's in that bag. So I kept track of all my tricks, which is fantastic. It was a really good system. But the problem is now I look at all the tricks and go, oh, I really like doing that trick, but I haven't done it for ages. Oh, mm-hmm. I like that one too. So...
You'd start throwing those back in, you know, from time to time.
I'm trying to give them all a go. I mean, we don't live forever. There's only a certain amount of time we've got to do all the tricks.
Right. So, there used to be a magician who had worked here in Houston at the Magic Island, Vic Kirk, who was one of my favorite magicians ever. He passed some years ago, but he knew everything about everything. He was like Johnny Thompson, but wasn't nearly as well known, it seems like. Well, anyhow, occasionally when he would be performing, his wife would hand him a different trick than what he was expecting in the act. And she would just look at him and smile and he'd go, okay, we'll do this one. And so it was kind of like that. He hadn't done this in a while. It's like, but it all just came back to him and it all seemed natural. It all seemed to flow quite well. And she just, you know, threw that in every once in a while, you know, to kind of keep him on his toes.
Yeah, one of the things we do in the Laneway Theatre at the moment, because we normally do at the Arts Centre in Melbourne, which is, you know, one of our prime arts venues, and we appreciate all the support they give of magic, mm-hmm. is Magicians at Work, which is our group, the Australian Institute of Magic. And we will have a night where we brainstorm our tricks. It's every 2 months. So once a month, we'd all get together and just work on the technical stuff. Mm-hmm. And we say, you know, I can't pan this, I can't do this. And we give each other advice and help. Then the next month, we'd do a show with all our brand new tricks. And the audience would come in. And right. We'd usually have a theatre director to give notes at the end of the show. But also, the audience would be given pieces of paper where they can write anonymous comments, anonymous uh-huh. feedback. Yeah. And that's where you find out whether your trick's really fooling them or not.
Right.
They're going to be honest about it. And so we do that a lot. And so that's another thing where magicians can sort of sit back and go, oh, you know, I really want to try this trick, but I don't feel like it's ready. I'll give it a go at Magicians at Work because the audience is so open and they're so ready sure. to watch.
And they know what to expect.
Yeah. And they also feel an obligation like, oh, I've got to give him feedback so he can make his trick better, you know.
So they're watching closely. Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Well, one of the reasons I was asking about how regular it is and about the venue itself, you say you work in cruise ships and you're kind of in and out. It doesn't sound like people can count on that like every third weekend or something because it kind of varies. And so if it's going to be, you know, a set time, kind of like my podcast is released every Thursday. Yeah. So people know what to expect. Something's going to be coming up. And so I would think the same thing if you're not doing it nightly or weekly, that if you have at least something on a monthly or regular basis, but yours is really kind of on an irregular basis. It sounds like, is that right?
That was a plan, but as I said, for the last 6 months, so it's been every Saturday night.
Okay.
And so, you know, that has helped a lot of people with their planning. I mean, for me, I cannot bear routine. I can't stand to do the same thing over and over again. I can't do it, but I'm learning. I'm working with people, but ideally in my dreams, the theatre would get such a nice reputation. People would know about it. They'd get excited to come, which, you know, thankfully at the moment they are. Yep. But I would like a much larger pool to pull from so that I really could just, as I get older, I can just go, I think I want to do a show next Tuesday.
Right.
Just put it on and they come.
Well, and that's the
dream. That's the dream.
But the other thing then has to do with marketing, and then we'll move on. But I know as people have different venues around the world, one of the most important things, obviously, are putting butts into seats. And how do you go about doing that? Do you use social media? Obviously, you've got a mailing list of people who have come to the show and you continue to let them know we got another show coming up and everything. And so you have a lot of repeat visitors and they bring their friends and family as well, I'm sure. But when it's time for you to do a show, how do you typically market your shows?
Only by email list. That's it.
Oh, really? Email only?
Yeah, I don't do any marketing. You know, we've tried a few things every now and again, but it's all very hit and miss. You know, Facebook marketing is almost a waste of time unless you know exactly what you're doing, mm-hmm. and you know, and that changes all the time. I would love to, you know, to hire a social media expert to do it, but I think with a venue, because my venue only seats 32 people. You know, it's a 32 mm-hmm. seat venue. If I start spending, you know, $200-$300 a week on marketing, which is not a lot,
it'll start to eat into your profit.
Oh, it definitely eats into the profit. Mm-hmm. So you know, I'm quite content with the whole word of mouth marketing that's going. I really believe, you know, magicians come up to me. I had a young magician 2 months ago by one of my illusions, and it was like one of the questions he asked was, "How do I get more work?" And I said, "By working."
That's right.
You just have to work. That's the only way.
And anywhere, even if it's free, just work.
Yeah. And that's the thing we've been doing with the Laneway Theatre is every time the audience comes in, we say, you know, please just tell your friends if you enjoyed it. And they're all like, yeah, we loved it. We had a great time. And they do thankfully tell their friends. And we have also had a lot of repeat customers from the Zoom shows because they've all, like, we've had thousands of people watching the Zoom shows.
Right.
And
right.
They're all very keen because they got to see inside the Laneway Theatre. They got an experience, a bit of a taste of it. They never knew it existed. And a lot of them join the mailing list and just want to know when they can come in and see it. But we still have in Melbourne, even though we're open, you know, we've been open from our lockdown for several months, we do have a lot of, I'd call it theatre hesitancy. People are very happy to go out and have a meal in a restaurant with friends or go to the pub or go mm-hmm. out, you know, to the beach with their friends. But they're still very, very wary about sitting side by side, shoulder to shoulder with strangers mm-hmm. in a theatre or a movie cinema. They're just really still wary. And I don't think that's going to change until after summer.
Well, when I was in France, I was at Paris to see Alexandra Duvivier and her father, Dominique, perform at the Double Fond. And that's been running since 1971. And it was downstairs, seats about 50 people. And really, it comfortably seats 35, but they put 50 in there. I mean, you are really literally shoulder to shoulder with everybody else. And it's completely French. I understood nothing during the whole show, except the magic was phenomenal in the way they work back and forth and everything. But they've been packing them in for a long time and throughout all of this then as well. Of course, it's Paris and it's...
There's absolutely a different culture going on. Mm-hmm. I know that a friend of mine was in New York and Broadway and where else? So he was in Broadway, he went to Vegas, went to a couple other places, and he said all the shows were packed out. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't believe it. He said in New York, they were very strict. They were checking your vaccination thing and they're checking your masks and everything like that. But in Vegas, they didn't care. He said in Vegas, it was just going...
Well, same thing throughout France. Everywhere he went, into every restaurant and department store, even if you went into a pharmacy or into a clothing store, whatever, there was security that's just checking your vaccination card, and you had to wear a mask, you know, to come in. Yeah. Pretty much then as well. Now, when you were doing Zoom shows and you charge for Zoom shows, do you keep those on file where people can go back and they can pay to watch the show again? I mean, you might say, hey, this was a particularly good show and I'm going to keep this up or post this someplace. In other words, I just wonder if Zoom shows have legs. You know what I'm saying?
They probably do. I don't feel mine do because I just love the spontaneity and the immediacy of the Zoom shows. Otherwise, you know, just record something good for YouTube and make it like a TV show. I think there's something about watching the Zoom show live as it's happening that is like a live show because you don't know what's going to happen. You know, even the feed could cut out. We did one show where the feed did cut out. Like I was actually, because we have the national broadband network here, which is not as good as it sounds.
Okay, well, it sounds horrible. We say national, it means like everybody's on it. Okay.
Your mileage may vary. So I was in the middle of one show, which was going really well. It was like a laneway theater tour sort of show. So I'm taking the whole setup throughout the tour, doing pieces in different venues, different parts of the venue. And at one point, as I'm talking, I'm showing them backstage and I'm talking, and I suddenly realize I'm not getting any reaction, and I've cut out. So my broadband connection is just gone. And I'm like, So I race back, I hook it up, I go into a hotspot and I fix it up and I come back on. And some friends of mine are like, oh no, it's been great. Apparently the kids who were watching were going, where is he? What's going on? Oh no, he's disappeared. Oh. And the adults were very entertained by the reaction of the kids during that. And I was like, oh, yeah. Anyway. And so I put the thing set up back in my, like, I'm now down in the Merlin room. I put this out there and I go to start to a trick and I look down and I see my camera battery, or my PC battery is extremely low because it doesn't give me a warning. It's a Microsoft PC. So anyway, and I went, hold on. And I go grab the power, go to plug it in. As I plug it in, it turns off.
Oh, perfect.
So again, all the zoop. Where's it gone now? What's going on?
I plugged it back in.
I got it online within less than a minute, which was a miracle. And I'm getting all this feedback. I was like, that was the best show so far. We loved it. It was so much fun. I'm going, really? Okay. Going, it was because it was so spontaneous. Everyone's like, what's going to happen next? Right. It just keeps them alive. You know, whereas if you have a really perfectly crafted Zoom show, it's a different animal. You know, you might as well just put that
on YouTube and then charge people to watch something that's already pre-recorded. Yeah, I understand. I see what you mean.
You know, you can fine tune it and everything like that. But there's just something about, like, we were doing shows every Saturday night that were public shows, and people could pay $5, $10 or $20 or free if they were having financial problems, you know, and I wasn't going to decide whether they were legit
or not. It's up to them, sure.
It's up to them. You know, I just want them to have a good time. And we had like hundreds of people every Saturday night. It was really good. But also that would spin off into school shows where I was getting booked to do shows for schools because schools were doing remote learning, corporate events, private parties and stuff like that. So I was very, very busy during the lockdowns. Mm-hmm. And then it's now slowly starting to spin back as now the Laneway Theatre brand is much more well-known than it ever was, which is, you know, a little side effect of
you've gone international with it. I mean, not just from Melbourne or, you know, over to, and for people who are not as familiar with Australia, that Melbourne to Sydney is about 2.5 hour drive, roughly.
Really? How fast do you drive?
I drive pretty fast. How far away are you?
It's about 10 hour drive. It's a 10
hour
drive.
Okay. No, yes. I thought you were a whole lot closer than that. Okay. Well, that's on the map, you're just like an inch away, you know.
It depends which map you're looking at, really. They're not all to scale.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not like somebody's going to be driving over then necessarily for the show from
Sydney. People are not going to be driving from Sydney to see the Laneway Theatre and then driving home that night. No.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. But you have, again, gotten more nationwide and international attention through the Zoom meeting. So that's been...
We got some good press and some TV coverage and everything. That was just great.
And so after, again, you're doing live shows and everything then again, but are you... It sounds like from what you were saying earlier, you're not going to be going back and potentially may not be doing some cruising. So you may be picking this up and spending more time with the Laneway.
Oh, I'll be doing more Laneway shows. I'm really looking forward to putting this new show together. That's my main focus at the moment. And of course, the Melbourne Magic Festival, which has got applications open now until January 20. So that's coming up in June, July, pandemic subjective, of course. You know, we have been promised there will be no more lockdowns because in Australia, we're at 92 or 95% vaccination rate or something like that. We're very, very high in the vaccinations, mm-hmm. which is fantastic, but, you know, still got cases, but we, you know, and we're lucky because we're in summer at the moment, but the Magic Festival's in winter. So who knows what could happen then? So
I do want to go into the Melbourne Magic Festival because when I first heard about that, I guess whenever you had contacted me and said, you need to contact this lady and have her on your show. And that was Carissa. and Carissa had just won that. And you said she's going to be a superstar. And I got in touch with her and we did recorded a conversation that was probably back, what, 2017 or something. It's been several years ago, I think, since we had last when we talked about that. But she had just won that. And of course, has gone on to quite a bit of fame. And so you do have other people from time to time. So tell me about the festival itself, the Melbourne Magic Festival. Is it, it's comedy and magic, or what exactly is it? You say you formed it, what, about a dozen years ago or so?
Yeah, we have in Australia, we have a lot of festivals. We have the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. We have our Fringe Festival. We have in Adelaide, there's the Adelaide Fringe Festival. They're all very, very popular and mm-hmm. very, very well known and very heavily government subsidized. We started the Melbourne Magic Festival about 15 years ago, and we tried to get the Northcote Town Hall, which is my local, it's like 10 minutes up the road from me. We tried to get them involved as the main venue, which they were very happy to do because they were trying to get involved in the whole festival atmosphere. And so we created the very first Melbourne Magic Festival 15 years ago. We had just a couple of shows, but they all sold very well and it became an annual event. And it just grew and grew and grew. I think we had before the pandemic, we had 17,000 people attend over 2 weeks. Then last festival, which we ran, we ran a week of satellite shows. So there were venues, just existing venues like Laneway Theatre, Butterfly Club, other venues. And then the second week was all in the new hub, which is in the heart of the city now. It's a place called Arrow. And so there's four big venues that we've got in there. There's a 260-seat theatre, there's an 80-seat theatre, and two 40-seat theatres, one's close-up and one's parlour. Mm-hmm. And so we're going back there again next year, and people are very excited about the rooms because last year when we did our festival, 80% of the shows were sold out, which was unprecedented for any festival. And we don't and never have been able to get any government funding. So we've been able to exist without any support. It's just whatever.
Do you have to prove yourself first or something? Or are there a lot of papers to file and you just never did it?
A lot of papers to file. Okay. Yeah. Like applying for grants is a completely different animal. You actually have to get someone who knows what they're doing to apply for
grants. Yeah, I was
going
to say you need an attorney or somebody. Yeah.
Oh, well, there's like grant specialists and they will sit down and they'll write. They know the language. They know the boxes to tick and everything like that. But it's just so much work because you've got to pay them whether they get the grant or not. Hmm. And we don't have the budget to do that. We've tried applying ourselves. And, like at one point, the amount of work you have to put in for a $5,000 grant is the same you have to put in for a $50,000 grant. And at one point, someone was trying to convince me to get a $5,000 grant. I was like, I'll just reach into my pocket and pull out $5,000 if I want a $5,000. Yeah. It's much less hassle than going through all these hoops that you're going to give me and then afterwards having to justify what we'd spent it on. So, thankfully, because I'm a really bad bookkeeper, I always I look at the budget and I put the budget together. I go, oh, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tight this year. We're going to, and somehow we always manage to break even. Somehow we don't run at a loss. And the festival itself is designed in a way that anyone who wants to be a part of the festival, that you produce your own show. We give you the facilities and the abilities and the support to produce your own show. So you produce
like the Fringe Festival does.
Yeah. So you'll apply. You might get a spot, and so you pay for the room. That's all you do. You pay for the room. You know, register your rent, pay for the room, and we try to make the room rentals affordable enough so that if you sell 10 tickets, you've covered your cost of room. And that's the goal of the festival, to try and make it affordable for everyone. And we have some people who come in and they make an absolute bucket load of money from the festival, and they're very, very happy with it. And then other people come in and they don't do any marketing at all, and they maybe only sell a handful of tickets, but that's what they wanted. They wanted to just do their show and they didn't care about whether anyone came to see it. They had a new show they just wanted to experiment with. And, you know, there's other shows that come in. We have the standard sort of magic show that it fulfills everybody's expectations as to what a magic show will be, and they sell very well, and that's great. Then we have the other shows that come in that are completely off the wall, and half the audience love it and half the audience hate it. Those are the shows I try to get into the festival because they're the ones that will change it. I mean, Carissa's show is an example of that. She came with a show that was very different, and when she performed it the first night, things happened and she had to change the whole show completely by the next. So she was like doing a brand new show that was written the night before.
Right.
And it took off and exploded, you know, and, yeah. and that's the sort we like, you know, people who take risks and take chances.
That's why I was thinking somebody like Rob Zabrecki, someone who just got an off the wall kind of a show.
He's been here. Mm-hmm. He came as a guest. Yeah. We usually will book two international guests. Obviously not last year, maybe not next year, I don't know. But we usually book two international guests to come along. We've had Rob Zabrecki, we've had Boris Wilde, we've had Hilda Gimeras, we've had Shooter Gower, Max Maven, mm-hmm. Pop Hayden. So many different magicians have come along and performed for us, and they've done fantastic.
So it's not just like a magic convention in any way. It's really a festival that is open to the public, because you don't have workshops or lectures or anything for the local magic clubs or anything, right?
We do have usually one or two lectures if we have an international guest. This year we had a lecture from Nick Kay, who's one of our magicians. And it's interesting with Nick, because he became a magician by coming to the festival.
Hmm.
And now he's very well regarded, and he's done a few lectures, and he's creating his own material all the time, which is great. But the exciting thing is that we've got so many new magicians emerging from the festival. And I know, you know, from a business point of view, it's very bad. You know, I'm creating my own competition. It's a very bad decision.
I see what you mean.
But I love the fact that we have so many more magicians. I think there's so much of a market for magic. And just to give you a couple of indications, like Chi-Han Yeo is a lawyer, and he would consider himself a hobbyist magician, but his spending so much time with cards, and during Zoom, he's been workshopping with very famous magicians all around the world. And he's, you know, he can do anything with a deck of cards.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a very popular show last year, and I jammed with him and came up with an idea for a new show next year. And I would love to tip it, but I can't. But it's like an immersive piece of theater set around a card table. I would do it myself, but I don't have the chops. This is very different to anything I've heard of before. And I would love to tell you all about it, but I can't, because it's Chi-Han's show now. I've given it to him. But it's a really nice piece of theater where the audience play roles in it. And
really an immersive experience.
Yeah. It's essentially like a card game, like a backroom mm-hmm. card game that everyone's involved in. And it's
fun.
And then we've got Dom Chambers, who I've told you about.
Yes.
And I think you might be chatting with him at some point,
but yes.
Dom was one of our first junior champions, and his whole angle, he went on, America's Got Talent, that's where most of your listeners would know him from, and did the beer production. He produced lots of beers and things like that. And his whole character is him, you know, himself. You know, he's just an Aussie bloke. And he embraced that. And he's doing so much stuff that I'm sure he's going to tell you about. We're so excited to see people like him succeeding. And we've got Lawrence Lung, who is a comedian and actor who also performs at the Magic Festival. And he was already, you know, nationally, internationally known before he started doing the Magic Festival. Nicholas J. Johnson, who's an author and a magician and expert on all things cons and hustles. Mm-hmm. Now, there's so many performers. I could just list all of them.
There's another one, Crow. What's his name?
Raymond Crow.
Raymond Crow. Yeah.
Raymond Crow, he hasn't done the festival yet. He's always been to the Illusionists.
Oh,
you know?
I guess that's true. Truing with them, yeah.
He is doing his own solo show in Adelaide Fringe Festival called The Unusualist or Unusualism. Unusualism, that's it, Unusualism.
Okay.
And he's doing his own solo show during the Fringe Festival this year, which will be, I'm sure, a huge success. We did have a group called The Gentlemen of Deceit, which was Luke Hocking and Alex de la Rambellia and Vyom Sharma. And they were on Australia's Got Talent, and they did like a three-person magic show, which was very popular. Mm-hmm. But now Dr. Vyom Sharma is a doctor as well. He's actually become the face of coronavirus in Australia. So they constantly call him. He's always on panel shows advising the latest updates on coronavirus. So he's had to put his magic to the side.
A couple other names that come to mind, if you have not yet had, that I would throw in the ring, there would be Henry Evans and Rocco.
Yes, I know both of them very, very well.
I know you do.
Yes.
And I know that they do well internationally also.
They do. I've got so many stories about Rocco. He's so much fun.
Yes, yes. Now, speaking of competition and those guys competing also in FISM, you had a FISM winning act, which was like a 50s diner kind of a thing, a malt shop, a soda shop kind of a thing that you had put together many years ago. What year was that you had won for that?
That was Runaround Sue.
Runaround Sue.
94, I believe.
Okay.
Or could have been seven. I also won an award with the six-card rap, and that was at Lao San.
That was very funny. And you sold that. I remember when I talked to you some years ago, you had were putting that out. Is that still available?
They're both available. The six-card rap, I said, when I turn 50, I'll have to stop doing it because it's ridiculous. Someone at my age doing the six-card rap. And so I sold it to Hocus Pocus, and they released it. And then it got like, oh, this backlash. People going, no, you shouldn't be selling it. That's Tim Ellis's trick. I'm like, I am Tim Ellis. They go, no, you're the only one who should be doing it. I'm like, I don't want to do it anymore. And they go, no. So nobody bought it. It's still available as downloads on my shop. I've got a shop, timellis.com. You can send the link on there, but that's available. But then the Runaround Sue, which I did perform in the Laneway Theatre Experience. So I performed it days ago. And I still love performing it, but gee, it's
a lot of preparation to get that, put that together.
It's very slight heavy. It's very slight heavy. It's like, cause it's summer here and I've got air conditioning in the theater and you know, the way it works. And so I'm wearing a leather jacket and I'm like doing all this, and every now and again, I'm like, oh, it's getting stuck. It's because of the sweat on my arms.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just trying to turn the air conditioning on as full as I can.
Yeah.
I love doing that routine, and the audience thankfully still loves it. But that one is, I don't know if there's any DVDs left, but it's available as a DVD, a teaching DVD for people who are curious to learn it.
And I was going to say, speaking of FISM, then also is going to be in Quebec in 2022. You planning on coming to that possibly?
I don't know.
I mean, if everything kind of works out,
If everything kind of works out, you know, I would like to. I'd like to go along. I haven't been to a FISM since I think Dominica Danti took over in Blackpool. Blackpool, I didn't attend, and also Italy, I didn't attend. Korea, I did really want to go, but I think it ended up being during Magic Festival time, and that is the challenge that we have, because Magic Festival is held in the winter school holidays every year, and sometimes FISM does coincide with it. I don't know if the new dates. I don't think the new dates coincide with it at the moment, but it's been a bit of a challenge to coordinate.
When is the festival this year coming up? It's the June.
Yeah, it's in June, and date. You're catching me off guard. Why didn't I even prepare for this interview? it's the end of June, the start of July.
Okay, because I was thinking it was in August for FISM. I'll have to check the calendar also. So
I think it might be,
that maybe you may not have a conflict.
I think the dates do work, but I also am a bit suspicious as to whether international travel is going to be quite up there as
it's going to be pretty skittish.
Yeah, I've been speaking with Albert Tam. He's been going off to conventions in China. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to a convention. And I said, do you have to do quarantine? Yeah, just 2 weeks. I'm like, and that's worth it? Yeah. So he goes over there, it's 2 weeks quarantine. This is a convention, comes back and doesn't know the 2 weeks quarantine. I'm like, I don't know. I can think of my time than that. It would be great. I know that a lot of the conventions have been doing virtual versions of them, just so people can have something, you know, which is good. I know we had the virtual 4F, you know, we've had a few virtual events. Sean has done a few virtual PCAMs.
Well, that's another thing, of course, coming up at the end of April with the in 2022 with the 4F convention. Ooh. That's going to be the 50th finally, which is supposed to be live and in person. Again, the last 2 years has just been a virtual kind of a thing, but to have the real thing, they're planning on it. But unfortunately, I would think there are some countries with the restrictions that would not allow people to attend. So it's just like with some of the other conventions that I attend. Well, look, when I went to the to the Abbott's get together this year, which was the first convention kind of out of the chute, and that was this August. They were all United States citizens. They couldn't cross the border, even though it was not that far away in Canada from Michigan to come down and do that, but they couldn't cross the border to come over. So all of the registrants and talent were all United States citizens, basically.
Yeah. It is very challenging. We had, during the last Magic Festival we just ran, Simon Coronel was going to come and join us because he loves it. He's been here many times. He does a really great show.
He's from Australia, isn't he?
He is. He's from Australia. He moved over to America.
And
I think he's got dual citizenship. I'm not sure how it works. anyway, he was going to come, and he said at the last minute, he said, okay, I've done the math. He said, so the airline tickets at the moment are over $4,000 return.
Oh, my gosh.
Normally about $1,500. He said, they're $4,000 return. He said, then I've got to do quarantine at my own expense for 2 weeks, which is $3,000. So probably not, no.
That is amazing, because obviously it depends where you're going. I mean, domestically here, I'm doing a tour, lecture tour in late January in Florida, and I've got round trip from Houston to Tampa for $179, all in, tax and everything, you know. And I mean, one way was like $49, and coming back was when it was going to be expensive, you know, it's like another 120 or something. And then I'm going to be going out to LA, to shoot Masters of Illusion. And that's, I think I got round trip for under $200 for that also to LA from,
The interesting thing at the moment, even in Australia, because I mean our flights are very limited at the moment because there's not many people wanting to travel on the planes.
Sure.
But I see the footage of Americans all crammed into the planes, and most of them don't have their masks on anyway. And
No. It's just the opposite, that you have to wear your mask. In fact, as I was coming back from France,
I know you have to, but the footage I've seen,
that's true. No, the footage they show are people who are upset and they want to fight or whatever, but they were handing out the meals. And then I took a meal, started eating. The guy said, sir, you have to wear your mask. And I said, I'm eating. He said, yeah, but you have to put your mask on between bites while you're chewing, put your mask on. Oh man. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to be one of those guys who's going to end up, you know, on YouTube with, you know, fighting and arguing with him. It's like, okay, I understand, you know, it's fine. So, but they're very serious. Yeah, exactly.
I saw some footage of, I think it was a Korean or might have been a Chinese magic convention. And they all had masks which had clear fronts. Have you ever seen those before?
I've got one and I've used that. My good friend Dave McGee had one that he was using. And then I saw Jonathan Levitt, who was wearing one for a show. And I thought, and his was even better. It just kind of clips over the ears like a, sunglasses or something, basically. Yeah. And it doesn't fog, and they can see your smile and as you're talking and everything. I mean, it doesn't protect you from them, but it protects them from you, your spittle, it's and
like
everything.
Face shield more than
it's a face else. Shield. Exactly. Right. Yeah. I got a couple of them off of Amazon. And so, yeah, those things are, I would recommend them.
Yeah, I thought if you have to wear a mask during a show, but I mean, look, to be honest, the thing is, all the gigs that I've been doing here recently, everyone's double vaxxed and some have triple vaxxed, and they have to show their, you know, their things. And they're usually from the same office or the same group.
Right.
And I've prepared so much contactless COVID safe magic. And I've even got some tricks with masks that I can do when I'm wearing a mask and all this sort of stuff. But every single one I've gone into, I walk in and they're like, no masks. You can do anything you want. That's fine. I'm like, you sure? And they go, yep. Okay. And then I think the other one was, I was all sorted out. I'd done about five of them in a row, and then I turned to a school, and they were like, "Oh, you have to keep your mask on for the kids." I'm like, "Oh, okay." Because previously, when I'd done shows for schools, they'd done the opposite. They'd all had their masks off once they're in there. So the rules seem to be changing, as you know, everyone's got their own interpretation of it. As entertainers, I think we just have to be erring on the side of safety as much we can. I know that there's two magicians who are good friends of mine who've both had COVID in the last 2 weeks, and it is not a good experience. You know, they were both double vaxxed and they had very heavy symptoms, and they were just so grateful that they weren't unvaccinated, because they said they would have definitely been in the hospital, and you know, lost a lot of gigs. I think one of them, just for 2 weeks off, because he had to isolate for 2 weeks, he lost about $3,000 or $4,000 of shows, and it was all because someone at his work had been allowed to come in unvaccinated with no mask. And so I said, you know, you got to talk to your work about, you know, because essentially they cost you the money because they didn't do the right thing. But it's a very challenging situation, and I think we just have to look after ourselves. Yeah,
you have to look after yourself. You have to be cautious and conscientious. I just recently had lunch with Fielding West, who was in town, actually in Austin. I went up to see Ray Anderson at Esther's Follies. Well, Nick Lewin is supposed to join us for lunch, and at the last minute, Nick canceled because he said he had been exposed to someone who had COVID. Found out they had COVID. He said, because they had it, I don't have it. I don't think I have it, but I don't want to risk, you know, having it, and because I haven't had a test to possibly expose you guys. So he didn't come. It's like, well, it's better to err on the
Absolutely. And even I just read that they're saying that the cloth masks are not going to work against Omicron as well. They said they're saying that the surgical masks or the N95 ones are the ones you've got to go for the Omicron because it's just a bit more transmissible than the other ones. So
interesting.
Thankfully, it's not as fatal as the other ones. But I think we might be on the way down.
Well, let's hope so. Well, good luck with the Laneway Theater and everything. Sounds like that you got your holiday all planned and everything. So I want to wish you a happy holiday. But before we leave, of course, I want to ask your magic word. That is, since this is the Magic Word Podcast, what is your phrase or philosophy? What is it that you live by? What doesn't have to be a word. And what is it that is important to you?
Respect.
Respect. Oh, absolutely. I like that.
Respect. Respect yourself. Respect others. If you respect, you know, the magicians and their creations and your audiences, you can't go wrong.
Boy, that's right. Then they'll love you. I mean, that's true. I mean, it's, I love that. Respect yourself and others. Yeah. And live the life. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. It's been awesome. Thanks a lot, Tim.
My pleasure. Have a Merry Christmas, Santa.
Merry Christmas to you. So from Melbourne, Australia, that was Tim Ellis in the Laneway Theater. This is Scotty out. Thank you, Tim, for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. I appreciate your friendship and also your words and for sharing some of your advice, and your enthusiasm is infectious. And I hope that others perhaps might get inspired also and perhaps might want to create some sort of magic festival here in the United States or perhaps in one of the other countries, whoever is listening to this. It's very inspirational, and thank you for what you do. Congratulations on your successes then as well, and I wish you many more into the future. Well, again, this has been just a whole heck of a lot of fun. And I know you had mentioned also about, you knew I was going to be talking with Dominic Chambers. And so you had given me his contact information. And so since you've already mentioned it, I will tell the rest of the listeners that is who is going to be on next week. I'm going to have Dom Chambers as my guest. And if you have seen him on America's Got Talent, or perhaps on The Illusionist, then you know who I'm talking about. In the meantime, if you want to do a little bit of research, you can do that and look him up and watch his videos, but you'll be hearing his talk then on the episode next week. As this is being broadcast here this week, I am going to be in Florida doing a couple of in-person lectures. Instead of Zoom lectures, they're going to be live lectures while I'm down there. And then the week when Dom Chambers' podcast episode will run, I'll be out in Burbank, California with the shooting for the Masters of Illusion with Gay Blackstone and others. I'm not involved with that. I'm just there going to be getting some content for upcoming episodes in order to provide you with some really interesting conversations with some of the people who are involved with the production and the talent there at the Masters of Illusion. I just think it'd be kind of cool. So anyhow, we'll be doing that. So that's kind of my plan here for the next couple of weeks. And so in the meantime, stay well, get booked, and remember to respect yourself and your audience. This is Scotty out.